It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. Thank you so much for listening. You're each treasured, valued. You have purpose, my friends. Today, strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. Thank you to this team that I get to work with. That is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Jen, Charlie, all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Happy Friday, producer Steve.
Yahoo, it's here.
I thought you'd be a little bit more excited, but
I'm still in shock from we're probably not supposed to talk about our technical issues, but, you know, that little technical snafu we had yesterday still has my head spinning.
You do so well. We did have a little technical snafu, but it's live radio. We were able to actually adjust things for our rebroadcasts, but it happens. Life happens, producer Steve.
Yeah, it's trapeze, no net type of situation.
Well, we're back. So we obviously made it. Thrilled to have in studio with me Alan Thomas. You know him. He is one of our columnists. I always give you new monikers, don't I?
You always do, and it's great to be here, Kim.
Great to have you. You've written a piece, Court Complacency, and I was talking with somebody the other day. I said, Alan's going to be on the show on Friday, and he always makes me think. We always have, I think, really great conversations. So in segments 3 and 4, we're going to talk about this piece, Court Complacency. We'll be rolling it out in the newsletter this weekend.
Looking forward to it.
Yes. So that would be why you should go to my website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. We have all of our recaps and all of our podcasts there. And producer Steve, we've been on a two business day lag time on getting our shows and our podcast posted. And you know there's a lot of moving parts, producer Steve, to get from where we are here to having those podcasts up there. But February 7th is our goal, is that we're going to have a same-day post on that. And it's going to involve changing some of the moving parts. But that is our goal, is to get to that point. And that's pretty good for this little team, you know what?
How long have we been doing this? Because I want to say whatever the answer is, I don't know all the moving parts. I'm still trying to figure it out.
The key is that you take care of your moving part. And that's the very first thing that's important in this whole wheel, Steve. So keep going. Keep doing exactly what you're doing. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And I thank each and every one of you who support us. Steve, this week, our America's Veterans Story Show with Kim Munson, which broadcasts at 3 p.m. on Sunday. Great interview with Betty Cranmer and her daughter, Susan Gorman. Betty is 100 years old, Alan Thomas, and she grew up in Britain, and so she lived through the Battle of Britain. She was wanted to get into the Women's Royal Air Force. Since she had some nursing experience, they actually stationed her at a hospital, a burn and plastic surgery hospital, but 100 years old.
Man, every time you talk about these veterans, it just blows my mind how resilient they are.
Alan, that's why it's so important that we know our history. And when we look at school curriculum, what has been happening there, we realize that it's important that we know our history, all of it, the good and the bad. But right now, this whole movement on the CRT, critical race theory, this curriculum has been focusing on the bad instead of any of the good. And that's unfair.
It is. And it's this push away towards knowing your core civic knowledge. You know, one of the precepts of the Constitution is knowing what type of government you have in place and knowing the history. You know, America has definitely failed in many regards to uphold the Constitution. But if we don't look at the history and say, this is how it failed, this is why it failed, and this is why having, you know, these unalienable rights is necessary, then why live history if we're just going to repeat it?
And that brings us to our quote for today. Actually, and the quote at the end of the day is, maybe I should switch them around. I've never done that. That would be super, I'm going to switch it around. Here we go. Antonin Scalia. And he was an American jurist who served as an associate justice of the Supreme Court of the United States from 1986 until his death in 2016. He was described as the intellectual anchor for the originalist and textualist position in the court's conservative wing. He was born in 1936. He died in 2016. And he said this, "That's the argument of flexibility, and it goes something like this. The Constitution is over 200 years old, and societies change. It has to change with society, like a living organism, or it will become brittle and break. But you would have to be an idiot to believe that. The Constitution is not a living organism. It is a legal document. It says something and doesn't say other things." That's kind of exactly what you said.
I mean, exactly. And here's what this whole living document argument just frustrates me is, the Founding Fathers said it wasn't perfect. They put an ability for the Constitution to change, just very difficult by amending the Constitution, but that's on purpose. So they knew that things weren't perfect when they drafted it, and that societies down the line may have to change some things, and they provided an avenue for that change. But, you know, to Antonin's point, I sure am happy that my lease document doesn't change 3 months after I sign it, and they suddenly go, "Oh, why don't you pay $300 more per month?" I want that legal document to be set in stone, so I know exactly how much I'm going to pay. I don't want it to be a living document where they can choose what applies, what doesn't apply, and how much I can pay and how much I won't.
That is an excellent analogy of how this whole thing comes down. Good job on that.
I mean, if you don't have rule of law, then how can people live? You know, that's our problem with businesses and these regulatory agencies, right? When you don't have a rule of law, when you just have people who say, excuse me, this regulation applies now, but it doesn't apply to that business, or I'm going to choose to enforce it now and not choose to enforce it in the future, how can businesses really do anything? Because the rule of law isn't set in stone. So that's why rule of law is so important. That's why these legal documents need to be set in stone, is so that people know how to live their lives. They can base their lives around a certain way that they're supposed to live.
Okay, rule of law. Because Americans do believe in rule of law. You can even see that when we had the PBIs through this whole Wuhan China virus reaction disruption, and we saw all these rules and regulations come down, we see that Americans are people that want to respect rule of law. But that law needs to fall within this idea of the Constitution. And to have legislative bodies pass legislation that they know is unconstitutional. And we've even had presidents and governors sign things and say, well, let's just see what the courts have to say about it. In every aspect of our branches of government, legislative, executive, and the judiciary, each of them needs to stay within the guardrails of the Constitution, which hence goes back to the quote about the living Constitution. And when we talk about language, the word conservative has gotten a bad rap for a long time. They've actually wanted to make it sound like conservatives want to tell you how you can live your life. Well, Wuhan China virus reaction disruption actually shows that it's not so much the conservatives, but the quote-unquote progressives that want to tell you how to live your life.
Exactly. We just want to conserve a way of protecting how to live your life, right? We want to give you the ability to live your life. And the way we do that is by conserving the Constitution, by conserving your right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And so I was thinking about language, just as you were talking. The word conservative, it has the word conserve has a positive connotation when you're talking about conserving water, conserving. And perhaps also maybe we could take the word preservationist, that we want to preserve this idea of the Constitution. I like to think about language. What do you think about that one?
I like it too. The only problem is we're trying to preserve, I think, something that has been decades there's been an erosion of the Constitution for decades and 100 years, that we want to preserve a Constitution 100 years ago, not preserve the Constitution as it is today, if you know what I mean. So,
good point. Good point. Let's ask Steve Cruz what he thinks about all of this. Steve Cruz, 3 Points Financial. First question, what do you think about this conserve, preserve conversation? What do you think?
I have to admit, it just got on, Kim.
Oh, okay. So while you're getting on the phone, we're having this serious conversation, and then I toss it over to you. That's really good. Sorry about that, Steve. Let's talk about what we were really going to talk about, and that is last week we'd had some questions. The stimulus checks for families, was going to stop. But also wanted to know about how taxes on that, because, and again, I want to back up just a little bit. Steve Cruz, 3 Points Financial, fee-only financial planning firm. Explain the three pillars of what you do, or the 3 points with 3 Points Financial.
Yeah, the 3 points, tax planning and taxes, investments, and then retirement and financial planning. And we believe that, you know, all those three things need to be addressed cohesively to make the best progress financially.
And with that, this whole tax question, last week we had mentioned the stimulus checks that had gone out to Americans and the child tax credits. Will people have to pay taxes on that stimulus check money?
So on the stimulus check money, it's pretty straightforward. People are not going to have to, it's not taxable income. But they will receive a letter in the mail that they need to retain, just to show that they did get to report that they did receive a stimulus check, but it's not taxable. However, on the other item that I mentioned last week, the advanced child tax credit payments, I do think many people are probably going to be in for a surprise when they file their taxes for 2021. And the reason for that is in 2020, the tax credit, the child tax credit, is $2,000 per child. In 2021, that credit was increased to $3,000 for kids 6 to 17, and then it was increased to $3,600 for children under age 6. So overall, people are getting more money for the child tax credit. But the way that it happens is one half of the credit. So let's take the $3,000 per kid example for a child that's 6 to 17. $1,500 or half of that $3,000, $1,500 was prepaid in 2021 starting in July. And basically one-sixth of that $1,500, half of the credit, was paid each month in 2021 from July to December. So what that means is when people go to file their taxes for 2021, if normally they maybe broke even and they didn't owe anything, or they owed a little bit, or they got a little bit of a refund, they've already gotten $1,500 of that credit. And so all they have left when it actually comes tax time is an additional $1,500. And normally, that would be $2,000 when they actually file their tax credit. So, again, overall, they're getting more money, but because it's already been prepaid, when they actually file their taxes, they may end up owing more than they typically do, or their refund may be less. And so I just want people to be aware of that so they're not surprised when they actually file the return.
Steve Cruz, I cannot believe how complicated they have made this. That is why the services that you and Mary Alpers have at 3 Points Financial is so important. This is still a little bit as clear as mud to me, but it looks like government has their hand all over it. But thank you for, I think you've really clarified it. But wow. Okay, Steve, what's your final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners today?
Just let them know that we specialize in helping people achieve their long-term goals. We act as their partner, and we offer a free one-hour consultation, kind of a second opinion, if they're just looking to see, hey, am I on track, with my goals? And they can do that. They can schedule that at threepointsfinancial.com under the Contact Us section there.
And again, Three Points Financial, those 3 points are taxes, investments, and retirement planning. Steve Cruz, we will talk to you or Mary next week. You have a great weekend.
Thanks, Kim.
Okay. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Alan Thomas is in studio. We want to go through bills of the day, a couple of comments on some of the headlines, and then we'll talk about Alan's piece, Court Complacency, in segments 3 and 4. Stay tuned.
3 Points Financial is a fiduciary financial planning company focused on helping individuals and families. Mary Alpers and Steve Cruz at 3 Points Financial specialize in investment strategies, tax planning and preparation, and retirement planning with no product sales or commissions. Tax laws have changed and will continue to change. Inflation is real. 3 Points Financial helps you maneuver through these changes to achieve your financial success. For clarity and a solid, relevant financial and investment plan, while working with a company that puts your interests at the forefront, schedule a no-obligation initial consultation at 3pointsfinancial.com. That's 3pointsfinancial.com.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute, to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
From the lakes of Minnesota.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I'm Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And great to talk with Steve Cruz with 3 Points Financial. Before we went to break, another great sponsor of the show is Hooters Restaurants. They have 5 locations. That's Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And Monday through Friday, a couple of great things. They have happy hour specials, 3 to 6 p.m. for dine-in only. And their appetizers are beer cheese pretzels or boneless wings, lots of tots, buffalo shrimp or fried pickles, and specials on different drinks. And then their lunch specials, they're keeping the line on that. They have $8 items, $9 items, and in that $10 item range, I love their lunch, fish, and chips. And they have some new fries as well that I love. So be sure and check that out at my website, and that is Hooters Restaurants. And again, I thank them for their partnership of the show. Couple of things. Alan, yesterday we had talked a bit about this House bill, and we're doing a bill of the day because the legislature's in session. House Bill 22, 1066, sponsored by Representative Tim Geithner. And it is public education, curriculum, and professional development information. And the key things about this is that it would say that basically parents, community would have available to them so they could take a look at it, a list of the educational materials that that local education provider uses for each grade, subject, and course, a copy of each survey, non-academic assessment, analysis, and evaluation distributed to students, 3, a list of devices, programs, and software that the local education provider uses that collects student biometric data, and 4, information concerning the professional development requirements for educators whom the local education provider employs. And that last one, I've seen over the years that those that want to indoctrinate our kids start by trying to indoctrinate our teachers. So this is a very good bill. And I'm shocked, and Steve and I were talking about it on our pre-call, is there's only one name on this. The sponsor is Representative Geithner. You would think that you would have every Republican on this because this is so important. And I said to Steve, maybe it's that they want to, each legislator can introduce a certain amount of bills, so maybe they are wanting to save that for something else. But this sure seems like one that they should all be piled on.
It does. It does make me wonder how many Republicans are behind it. I sure hope quite a bit.
Right.
You know, because we definitely need a lot more unity within the party, especially here in Colorado, to get some of these good bills through and to get the public support that we need.
Absolutely. So wanted to just make sure that people knew about that. And again, that's House Bill 22. 1066, a very good piece of legislation. And gosh, I would think, I would think that Democrats would should be on board on this. I think every American would want to be on board on this. So as we talk about the veil is coming off on different agendas, just keep an eye on this. Another one that we're going to mention, and that is, get me to it here, House Bill 22-1085. And the sponsor on this is Representative Ron Hanks. And he was on the show on, I think it was Monday or Tuesday. And he is one of the candidates for U.S. Senate. And I want to make a point. Any candidate that wants to get on the show and reaches out to me, I will make sure I find time on the show, because I think it's important that the listeners get to know the candidates and they get an opportunity to talk about what they're all about. But this one is concerning paper ballot fraud countermeasures. And it says it's a bill that requires that paper used for paper ballots have certain fraud countermeasures, and that paper ballot records be provided by vendors that have one or more specified accreditations in any primary, general, coordinated statewide, or statewide recall election. The bill requires the General Assembly to annually appropriate money from the general fund to the Department of State as necessary for the Department of State to pay county clerk and recorders for the costs related to complying with the requirements of this bill. Seems, as we're looking at our elections, the things that we can do to, I think, reduce vulnerability is important. And so this is at least Representative Hanks, I think, first move on election vulnerability, integrity. Any thoughts on this, Alan?
It seems pretty common sense and kind of surprising that it's even needed. You know, you would think, you know, something as important as that would have a watermark or some sort of fraud countermeasure, because it just makes sense. You know, when you have vulnerabilities, you know, checks and banknotes and your money all have fraud countermeasures because they're important. It just seems like something you would do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens with that one. Next thing, I think we should at some point in time, Steve, maybe find some music as we start to connect the dots. And the next one is, let's see, this came from The Hill, which is pretty left-leaning. And interestingly enough, most of the top lobbying firms, well, the report, record-breaking 2021 earnings. And going on through here, one of the firms here in Colorado, which is Brownstein, Farber, Hyatt, I can't remember all the names, but they brought in $56.3 million in lobbying revenue last year, more than any other firm on record. That is an increase of 14% from the firm's 2020 total, which set a new benchmark at that time. It said the influential firm reported nearly $16 million in fourth quarter earnings, a 29% bump from the same period in 2020, according to figures that were required to be filed to Congress Thursday. In recent months, Brownstein's lobbyists keyed in on federal implementation of the bipartisan infrastructure bill and key provisions in the Build Back, well, they call it the Build Back Better Act, but I think that's the Build Back Bankrupt Act. And here we have, right here in Denver, Colorado, a firm that raked in record revenues on that. And then just connecting a dot, and I just think it's important. You mentioned the Republican Party, Alan, but one of the attorneys that is with Brownstein Farber is also the attorney for the Colorado State GOP. And then we've got all this brouhaha over here in the state GOP regarding bylaws, which many times requires an opinion by an attorney. And so I think this is just, this may be initial connect the dot, but I think it's important that everybody will be aware of that, Producer Steve.
Well, okay, I'm glad that there's two of you here, because I want you two to educate me. What is the whole purpose behind lobbying and that industry? I mean, it happens here at the state level, and we certainly know what happens in Washington. What is the reason for lobbying or lobbyists?
And that is, well, initially, I think it was that there was legislation out there and industry would hire people, lobbyists, to go to the legislators to inform them of what is in that particular bill. But now, with all of this legislation, as long as it is, as complicated as it is, legislators are not reading it before they pass it, which I think that's wrong. If you can't read it, you shouldn't vote on it, or vote yes on it. But then these lobbyists come in and they say, this is what it says. But I don't think it is always what they say it says. So that's how we've gotten into this point, and it's basically gotten to a point where it's influence. What do you think, Alan?
No, I absolutely agree. And, you know, lobbying gets a bad name, but inherently it's necessary. I mean, farmers out on the front range can't individually come to the state house to advocate for good agricultural bills. So they hire, you know, they group their resources and they hire a lobbyist to come to the state capitol and advocate for agriculture. And just to be fair, advocate for good bills for agriculture and then also to educate legislators on bad bills, you know, things that will hurt the agricultural industry. So lobbying is necessary, but it is very interesting when you need lobbying for bills that have already been passed, you know, especially these big bills that nobody has fully read or fully understood. Mm-hmm. And that's where you start to get some questions. Mm-hmm. and you start to think. And absolutely, it's gotten to the point where if you have enough money and you can basically buy a legislator's, you know, rerun campaign to get them back in office, it makes lobbying seem pretty murky.
Nefarious.
And one of the biggest lobbyists lobbyists is Big Pharma. And so we've seen in a lot of this legislation that there's legislation that then is passed that is favorable to that particular industry. And we need to reclaim this whole idea of the Constitution keeping the federal government smaller. Lobbyists, all this money has made it bigger and bigger. But I there's just a couple of questions, and this is a beginning of a connect the dot with me, is how is it that a firm in Denver, Colorado had record revenues regarding the Build Back Better Act, and then we've got all of these challenges with what's happened in Colorado with shutting down our oil and gas industry and CRT and curriculum. And I continue to say that Colorado is at the tip of the spear, Alan. That is why when we open the show and I say, you are made for this moment, Alan, you were made for this moment. I was. We need to continue to shed light on this, work to reclaim this American idea, to pass something good on to the next generation. Your thoughts?
Absolutely. I mean, there's an adage, follow the money for a reason, right?
Mm-hmm. And so we will continue to connect the dots. One other thing before we get to our next segments is on Wednesday night, the big voting rights bill. And it did not pass. God bless Joe Manchin and God bless Kyrsten Sinema, the senators, Joe Manchin from West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona. But it is beyond belief to me, the pressure that has been put on there. And that would basically federalize our elections. Our founding fathers said no, that the state should be in charge of their elections. This power grab is very telling. And we had run the promo the other day that Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser has issued an edict that if you want to go to a restaurant, a bar, or any place in Washington, D.C., that you have to show your vaccine card. And then apparently people have been trading their vaccine cards. So now she says that you need to have photo ID. But yet you don't need photo ID over here. It's racist to have photo ID for voting. But she's just saying to a big portion of the black population in Washington, D.C., and many in the black community are suspect of the vaccine, so their vaccination rates are less than maybe other segments of the population. But she's saying to you, if you don't have this, you can't go into a restaurant. It doesn't match up, Alan.
That whole argument never has, and that's the problem, right? I mean, who doesn't know how to go get a photo ID? I mean, are you really calling people stupid? Like, are you really saying they're so stupid they can't get photo ID? It's needed for virtually everything. I mean, to fly, you need a photo ID. So that whole argument has just never had a leg to stand on, in my opinion.
Well, and Steve, you have a good point. You decided to do a countdown.
Yeah, I took our infamous wall calendar here and did a countdown to November 8th, which is the date of the midterms. You, as of today, you have 291 days to get that idea if you don't have it. But who in the world, like Alan is saying, who in the world doesn't have one?
Right. And so the narrative, the exciting thing, Alan, is the wheels are coming off many of these narratives. And that's why it's important that we continue to shed light on this. That's why this show, we look for truth and clarity through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And the show comes to you because I get to work with a lot of really great people.
And on the line with me is one of my great partners, and that is Hal Van Herkey. He and his wife, Linnea, are great partners of both the shows, The Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson. And they are true entrepreneurs. They own Castlegate Knife and Tool, which is a premier knife and tool store. It's located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. It's a family-owned business. Hal Van Herkey, great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Kim. It's great to be here, as always.
And you are out in Vegas right now.
Yeah, we're in Vegas for the SHOT Show, which is the largest firearms industry-related show in the world. It's held annually in Las Vegas, what didn't happen last year because of COVID, but it's back strong this year, which is great. The Consumer Electronics Show was last week, and they still had 75% of their people not showing up, but about 70% of the SHOT Show attendees are here, so obviously not as concerned about COVID and wanting to move forward with their businesses as compared to the big tech companies. So,
okay.
So, nice little plug.
Somehow I'm not surprised on that. What's Vegas like? Is Vegas humming again? Because it was shut down. What's going on now?
Yeah, I'd say it's humming again, but quiet, which makes it a great time. I'm not a Vegas travel poster, but it looks like a perfect time to go to Vegas because everything's open and it's about maybe overall 50% capacity, so you don't have huge lines for restaurants or shows or things, so probably a good time to go if you're so inclined.
Okay, that's good to know. What are you seeing at the SHOT Show? I know that you are always looking for new products, innovative products. What are you seeing there at the SHOT Show?
Yeah, two of the things that come out to mind for us, of course, we're out here at a firearms show, but it's also the largest knife industry show in terms of us meeting with our vendors. And one big thing is that Microtech is here for the first time ever, and they've got a very large booth displaying their entire line. So they're demonstrating their commitment to the industry. And most of their models have been announced at the beginning of the year, independent of the show, but they've doubled their capacity over the last 2 years. So we're expecting to get more and more of their product in all the time. But the one that really stands out for me so far that I've met is Benchmade. A Benchmade out of Oregon, obviously, has also really invested heavily in expanding their capacity of U.S.-based knives. And they probably came out with almost two dozen new models this year that they announced at the show, which is incredible. Their product quality has always been great and seems to be right at the top of the industry, maybe the best that it's ever been. We're just now starting to get some of those new products into the store and looking forward to getting all of those new models in over the next 3 to 4 months. So that'll be very exciting.
I love it. You're singing our tune, Hal Van Herkey, American Made, and just love that. So thank you so much. Enjoy out there, and thanks for letting us know about that. And again, if you are shopping a wedding gift, a birthday gift for a chef, a sportsman, a collector, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. Their website is castlegate.com. Okay, Hal, we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Kim.
Okay, thanks so much. Bye. And we'll be right back with Alan Thomas.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there, and you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And a couple of things coming up. I am just so excited to let you know that the media training workshop that Helen Raleigh and I are doing on February 19th is sold out. But I talked to Helen the other day, and she said we should do another one. So stay tuned, because I know a lot of you are super interested, and we're surprised it sold out that quickly, but really jazzed about that. And then next Saturday is the Longmont Republican Women, along with the Boulder County Republican Women and the Boulder County GOP, are hosting a forum with all of the, I think it's all of the senatorial candidates. And it's going to be a great evening. That is on the 29th. And I will be co-moderating that with one of my colleagues from Liberty Toastmasters. That's Marshall Dawson. And you can, the flyer's on my website. You can buy your tickets there. In studio with me is Alan Thomas, and he is a columnist, I'm calling you today, with the Kim Munson Show. And I so appreciate the pieces that you are writing, because I can tell you put a lot of thought into this, and you always challenge me. And this one is titled Court Complacency. So start to walk us through this on this, Alan.
So this really came, you know, it started a little bit last year when some of these vaccination mandates were starting to come up against some of the courts, and one of the courts for our service members said that the Marines should be allowed to go through the Reasonable Accommodation Act, and people were happy that they agreed with that. And you know,
and the Reasonable Accommodation Act is
allowing medical or religious accommodations to for
so
not getting the vaccine.
Okay,
exemptions.
Okay.
Yeah. So then, you know, we started out the year, and the Supreme Court decided it wanted to hear about the OSHA mandate and the Health and Human Services medical worker mandate, and both of those were rushed. And you know, right away when the court struck down the very unconstitutional OSHA requirement for vaccinating your employers, you know, everybody went crazy. Everybody was happy. You know, every legislator went on Fox News and said how this was a great day for liberty and freedom, and I'm not going to disagree. I'm not going to say that it wasn't. It absolutely was. However, I wasn't sharing the same excitement. It was more of a, I'm thankful it happened, but I didn't see it as a win. And then the news came out that the vaccination mandate for health workers by the Health and Human Services was upheld. And as I was researching the article, I found out that, you know, they required it for facilities that take Medicare and Medicaid. And I didn't realize that it's estimated that 71% of all health facilities and 85% of all health facilities take Medicare and Medicaid. So when you think about that, the Health and Human Services now has this insane amount of force over 85% of a very critical industry that everybody has to use. And so while we're celebrating one Supreme Court ruling, the other one actually handed an insane amount of force to the government. And it just made me think, should we be even celebrating Supreme Court wins? Should we be celebrating court wins? And I went back and I started looking at some of the Federalist Papers. So Federalist Papers number 78 is the one I use in the article. That's the big one. And they really describe the Supreme Court as this bulwark, you know, and that's a little bit of older language. A bulwark is a defensive wall that you construct, you know, around positions that you want to defend. And it made me think, you know, when you're in battle and you're defending against an attack, you're thankful that the defensive wall is there. You're thankful that the enemy can't scale past that bulwark or get mm-hmm. past it, but you're not exactly celebrating, right? Like they're on your doorstep. You're getting attacks right where it's most critical. And that's how we've treated Supreme Court wins lately. You know, that's one of the key things Trump did was give us the Supreme Court, and we're thankful for it. But these aren't wins, because one of the examples I use is Jack Phillips. You know, he went before the Supreme Court. He won. The Supreme Court agreed with him. And we all treated this as a win. And instead, he just got sued again and again and again. And actually now, what progressives have done is they've said, okay, well, the Supreme Court is federal law, so now we're going to sue him in the state courts, and he lost. And so we need to start treating the Supreme Court less as victories and wins and celebrations and more as attacks against our Constitution. And yes, we may have survived the attack, but we need to quit playing defense. We need to quit relying on the Supreme Court. We instead need to go on offense and start taking this to a legislative battle and start trying to pass bills and laws to protect the Constitution, to start to hole up some of these holes that we're relying the Supreme Court to fill. And instead, we need to go out and work with our legislators and tell them to shore up the defenses so that it doesn't get to the Supreme Court in the future.
That is absolutely fascinating. Alan, I recently met with someone that was considering running for office, and somebody had asked the question, what would be one of the first pieces of legislation that you would put forth? And she said, gosh, I don't know. I hadn't thought about that. And I said, well, how about finding a really bad piece of legislation and putting forth legislation to get rid of that? And that would be something that I think would be aggressive, because to your point, when the enemy is at the doorstep, at the bulwark, where they're trying to get in, they don't give up. And you cannot, for example, Kavanaugh was one of those that ruled in favor of the HHS mandate. And I'm not a Supreme Court justice, and I'm not a constitutional expert. However, it looks to me like if we're all to be equal under the law, that if you can't mandate over here under OSHA, but all the healthcare workers can be mandated, that seems like a big disconnect to me.
It does. And you know, they use little caveats to justify their opinion. And that's the problem. And, you know, in my article, I said, you know, all these legislators were willing to get in front of Fox News and a camera to say, hey, this is a big win, but none were able to, you know, pass legislation to say, let's shore this up. And of course, like 3 days after I typed that out and sent it to you, Dan Crenshaw actually did. He came up with a bill and said, no, we need to tell HHS they don't have this legal authority, that Congress hasn't delegated this power to HHS. And to the point of this article, that's the call to action, is we need to start legislating that. We need to start saying, okay, you said it was allowable by Congress. Well, now Congress is going to say it's not allowable. You know, we need legislators to have the guts and the fortitude to say, you know what, this may not be popular, but I don't think that this regulatory agency, that these PBIs should be allowed to have this force. So I'm going to propose legislation to take that force away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell my government that, no, you don't have the power to regulate 85% of an industry if OSHA doesn't have that requirement. And you know what? I would have said it the same thing had the Supreme Court ruled that OSHA did have that authority. We would have needed legislators to come in and say, no, we're going to strip that power away from OSHA. We're going to strip that power away from HHS. We're going to get rid of bad legislation, bad laws. It goes back to the whole repeal and replace Obamacare. No, we just need to repeal it. You know, we'll worry about the replacement part later. Repeal bad legislation, because living with bad legislation isn't good either. So we need legislators who have the guts and the courage. And that's what comes down to us, too. We need to be able to ask the legislators these questions. We need to be able to tell them, I'm in favor of you repealing law after law after law if it's bad, if it's shown that it's not good for the economy.
Wouldn't that be exciting to have a whole group of legislators? Because, Alan, I honestly don't think we need another law at all. I don't think we need one. I think, wouldn't it be awesome to have a group of people that said, I'm going to run for office on city council. We're going to go through. We're going to take a look at all the ordinances of the city, and we're going to clean that up. Legislators down at the State House. And one of them that's coming to mind, and I want to go to break so that I get it right, is this one that has given all this power to all these health departments. So I'm going to check that when we go to break. Alan Thomas is in studio talking about his op-ed, court complacency, which always you always make me think, and I love that about these pieces and when you're on the show. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, Kirsch Insurance Group is another great sponsor of the Kim Munson Show. They are specialists in the Medicare arena. And as we can see, it's very complicated. There is no cost to have a consultation with them. They work with a number of different carriers here in Colorado. And right now we're in an open enrollment period, I believe it is, where you can make a change to your Advantage plan. And of course, if you're coming up on turning 65 this year, you'll need to know what you need to do about Medicare as well. So Kirsch Insurance Group is the place for you. It's iKirsch.com, iKirsch.com. We'll be right back with Alan Thomas.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Don't miss your chance to hear from the Republican Senate candidates as they go up against Senator Michael Bennet. Longmont Republican Women present a Republican Senate Candidate Forum on Saturday, January 29th at Twin Peaks Charter Academy in Longmont. Doors open at 6 p.m., dinner is provided, and forum starts promptly at 7 p.m. Tickets cost $35 and no tickets will be sold at the door. Our very own Kim Munson will be moderating, so you don't want to miss it. Get your tickets at longmontrepublicanwomen.org today. Once again, find more information and get your tickets at longmontrepublicanwomen.org.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out your my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Alan Thomas, your piece, Court Complacency. And these two Supreme Court rulings that came down, they look like they're a big disconnect, because we're all to be taught, we're all equal before the law. And so to to rule that OSHA cannot mandate these vaccines, but yet over here Health and Human Services can, there's just such a disconnect on that. And when you're having continual attacks on something, it's very difficult. And we saw that Kavanaugh, I'm not surprised that Roberts ruled the way he did, but I was surprised Kavanaugh. But when you continue to have these attacks, it's very difficult for people to keep their true north, to be able to stay true to the Constitution.
Well, and it makes sense. I mean, when you think about battle, when you attack a defensive position, each attack slowly erodes it, slowly wears it away. And that's what happens when these cases come before the Supreme Court. Slowly our Constitution starts to get eroded away, especially when you have Supreme Court justices who think that it's a living document and they're able to do whatever they want and they can interpret it to the times. And, you know, Sotomayor and the rest of them just think, well, if that sounds better, this is an old document, so we need to change the law, and I'm going to do that through my rulings. It makes sense that each of these slowly starts to erode the Constitution, which is why it's not really a celebration that we won, right? Because it's again, even though the ruling went in our favor, it was still another attack against the Constitution to a populace that isn't very civically minded, that doesn't really understand the Constitution and why it's there and how it came to be into being.
Well, and the attack on the Constitution has been going on for many years. And really, I think beginning in the 80s, the early 90s, I didn't understand what I was seeing. But there was a concerted movement to chip away at the Constitution, talk about this living document. And again, that constant attack And they really almost accomplished what they wanted to do. I don't think that they ever thought that there would ever be a Trump. I don't think they ever thought that there would be maybe another Republican president, which I find from a strategic standpoint so interesting that Ruth Bader Ginsburg did not get off the Supreme Court. The strategic move would have been for Obama, for her to retire, and Obama to be able to appoint a young justice that would be on there for a long time. And from a strategic move, I don't know what to say exactly, but it seemed like they missed one. So then you get Trump here. You get these Supreme Court appointees. They're not as conservative as we thought they were going to be. But and we cannot depend on them to be this bulwark against the American idea.
Exactly. And you know, I do think that is going to be one of Trump's lasting legacies is the amount of justices, not only in the Supreme Court, but in federal court that he got approved. But, you know, Kim, it kind of brings up this kind of interesting thing. While I was looking at the Federalist Papers, when I was typing in some keyword searches, some of the anti-Federalist Papers came up. And it was kind of interesting. One of the warnings that Brutus, you know, you had Publius for the Federalist Papers and Brutus wrote for the Anti-Federalists. One of the things they were arguing about was these life term appointments for the Supreme Court justices. And one of the things the Anti-Federalists said was these justices will believe that they're above heaven and hell. Like they will believe they're above everything because they get to decide what the supreme law of the land is. And it's very interesting that seems to be the case now. You know, they did try and tell Ruth Bader Ginsburg to step down. Obama and his team asked her to. That way he could appoint a justice, and she didn't. And it just kind of – I'm not necessarily sure that was her motivation, that she wanted to keep this power of being a Supreme Court justice. I don't know her well enough at all. But it is kind of interesting that is how a lot of these activist judges do see themselves now. You see that – those rulings from Sotomayor and Kagan and all the others, that they do believe that they're a step above the Constitution, that they now have the power to make these rulings. And I just found it very fascinating doing the research that some of the warnings of the Anti-Federalist Papers actually did hold true. Not necessarily that I would change the life appointments, but it is that's the key part about history, is you have to look at both sides to see what are the warnings? You know, what should we be looking out for?
Right.
And it definitely has started to come true to a small extent.
Okay, so help me out. I've never read the Anti-Federalist Papers, but Jefferson was part of the Anti-Federalists, correct?
Or he was part of the Federalists.
Jefferson and Hamilton, I thought, was part of the Federalists.
Yeah, they all were. So Jefferson, Hamilton, and Madison wrote most of the Federalist Papers, and they, again, it was actually kind of a brilliant marketing move. They called the people they were writing against the Anti-Federalists.
Right. So anti is always a clarification. I got to check. I always thought Jefferson was part of the Anti-Federalists, but okay.
Maybe the party, but not, he wrote the Federalist Papers, and so there were the Anti-Federalist Papers and then the Federalist Papers, so.
Okay, I got to check that, okay?
All right.
So, well, I'm going to check that. Not that I don't trust you, but we got to do that on air. This Title 25 in Colorado, which gave all this power to the public health departments, that is a piece of legislation. I looked it up. It's like when all this was happening, is how did they get that much power? Well, the legislature gave that to them. The document is now 1,100 pages long. How about we have some legislators who say that they're going to walk that thing back? Your thoughts while I'm checking this out.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, again, it kind of comes back to ownership. You know what they say about ownership? Possession is 9/10 of the law. You know, as long as you have something, the law kind of assumes that it's yours. And that's how a lot of these politicians and bureaucrats view a lot of these, like Title 25. You know, if I can try and get away with it, as long as nobody objects to it, I guess I'm allowed to do it again and again and again. And that's how this overreaction, I think in large part, that's what happened, is we overreacted. People said, okay, I guess the government does have that power, and we didn't really challenge them too much. And then by then it was just accepted, well, the government has that power. You know, these state health agencies have that power. And I mean, 1,100 pages, Kim. How can you not find some nuance to justify some behavior or action or force that the government has? And it's again, it goes back to, well, just pass it and we'll see what's in there. Well, most of the time, there's enough nuance and loopholes that it basically means you can do whatever you want.
Well, as government, and they can pick winners and losers. So, Federalist Papers, Alexander Hamilton, James Madison, and John Jay under the Publius. Jefferson, you know what? Let's have this. Stay tuned for next time. How's that? We're going to talk.
You read my mind, Kim. That was actually, as researching for this, I was like, man, what other things did the Anti-Federalist Papers write about that were warnings that may have possibly come true now? So
let's do that. It's always fascinating. So that'll be next month. That's our teaser for next month. Always, it's great to have you here. Your piece, we will roll that out this weekend. It'll be in the newsletter, so be sure and sign up for that. And then it'll be on the website. Ellen Thomas, final thought you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Just, you know, as we're coming into primary season, let's hand, you know, these candidates, let's give them these tough questions. Let's ask them to start doing the difficult things. Let's not be scared to stand up for our rights and what we want done. And we need to, you know, encourage them that, you know, we're going to vote for you. We're going to go out for you. We're going to walk for you. We're going to get the votes. If you tell us you're going to do these things, if you tell us you're going to stand behind the Constitution, if you tell us you're going to repeal bad laws, if you tell us you're going to strip the power away from the government to its proper role, we're going to stand behind you. We're going to help you. So whether you're running for office or not, there's still action and there's still things you can do. And there's always persuading your friends, your neighbors, and your family to think constitutionally, to think about all these big concepts.
Okay. That's for sure, Ellen Thomas. And it's great to have you here. And it's going to be a great conversation next month.
Always great to be here, Kim.
Okay. And our quote for today is from Antonin Scalia. He says, as long as judges tinker with the Constitution to do what the people want instead of what the document actually commands, the politicians who pick and confirm new federal judges will naturally want only those who agree with them politically. So my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.
And I don't want